Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show. What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with...
Coach Nick.
Coach Nick, welcome to the Challenge Weekly Show. How are you doing today?
Thank you. I'm very good. It's nice to see another human.
Yes. You know, we are in Melbourne lockdown 4.0, and we're all working from home. So this podcast, normally we're doing it face-to-face, Nick, but we are now online doing this podcast.
Which is awesome. It's good that we can do that as well. Our jobs are very adaptable, which we're very fortunate. We can rave on anywhere, anytime about all of this stuff. It doesn't matter where, does it?
Yes, no, so good. Look, now in the challenge, we are in week three now. So it's progressing quite quickly. And once we get to the end of week three, you know, we're a quarter of the way through. And I think just to reiterate, you know, that the 12 weeks of the challenge, yeah, it does seem like a long time, but it's also a really short time as well. The 12 weeks is going to go by whether you do the challenge or not, and it's going to go by quickly. So we're getting close to that quarter of the way through the challenge mark. And of course, halfway is just around the corner as well. And then, you know, we're not too far from the end.
Yeah, it's a really good time, that week three, to just make sure that you've got all your habits in place. Just your consistency should be sort of starting to form a pattern now.
That's right. Well, look, I think when we're in week three, we're still kind of in that like excitement phase, right? Where we've just been working out for 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks if you've done prep week. And it's times like this where everything still feels easy, right? And just in a few weeks, maybe a month from now, it's going to start getting hard, where you've got to really drag yourself out of bed. You've got to really drag yourself out of the house to go to the gym, or you need to really get yourself out there to go do your steps, or force yourself to do your meal prep on the Sunday or wherever you're choosing to do meal prep. So right now, think of it as it's quite easy because it's fun, it's exciting, but it's going to get challenging, especially in that week six, week seven, week eight phase, which we kind of have this little lull in the challenge. So we've got to grind through it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why it's a challenge.
Now, Nick, we are week three. The theme of the week this week is all about supplements. So if you're listening to this podcast, I'm going to recommend that we spend the week digesting some information about supplements. And we've got a range of information on our challenge website, which you can go through, some videos of me explaining different supplements, how they affect your body, and those types of things. So spend some time to understand supplements. And I do think that a lot of us kind of put supplements up on a big pedestal, right? Where we go, oh, you know, I'm taking this supplement, it's going to be amazing. And we kind of forget that, you know, the supplements really are just that icing on the cake. We still need a good cake, right? And sure, sometimes that icing can be really tasty, and sometimes we just want to eat the icing and not the cake itself, but we're trying to build a really great cake for maybe your kid's birthday. And we want to have that nice solid foundation that everyone loves. And then that little bit of icing on the top to make it pretty as well. So just be careful that we don't get caught up in that rut where we might be prioritizing supplements over a full and balanced diet, because really that is going to be the bulk of our nutrients, and supplements is just that extra little bit on the top.
That's right. Supplements really just, that's their name. They supplement other stuff, so they can't be like, they're not called entire package of training nutrition. But yeah, they're supplements, so yeah, they should be on the side.
Look, a few other updates with the challenge. So tomorrow, which is on Wednesday night, we have a special guest, Craig Harper, joining us on our Facebook support group. So our Max and Maxine official Facebook support group, Craig Harper will be going live from 7 p.m. and that'll be Melbourne time. So he'll be doing a Q&A like presentation to our Facebook group. So make sure you're part of the Facebook group. And of course, you can watch it afterwards as well, because there'll be that recording. So you can check out Craig Harper, who great speaker, author, writer. He's got massive biceps and the mouth of a sailor, and I think he's doing his PhD as well. So overall, top look. Go check out Craig Harper on Wednesday night.
I'll be watching. I'll be asking questions. That's for sure. How exciting for all of us.
It's going to be good. Yay. Now, yes, like I said, we're in week three. So week four is around the corner. We've got check-in for that week four progress. So if you log into the challenge website, you'll be prompted to upload a week four progress photo. That week four photo, you don't need a check-in document or anything like that. It's literally just, you know, a selfie in the mirror, something like that, a progress shot. And it could be a great way to compare your progress. So we're looking at that prep week photo, that week one progress photo, and compare that to that week four photo. Because sometimes, you know, we might not be seeing a big change in the mirror. We might not be seeing a big change maybe on the scales, but we might be able to see progress in a photo when we compare that starting photo to that week four photo.
Yeah, I think photos are a really good tool for me sometimes when things don't look like they're budging in all my other data, and I take a photo and I realize, whoa, something's happened. So sometimes, you know, visuals are a fantastic way to also monitor that progress. You know, so that's why we have those check-ins as well.
And then finally, you know, we are still continuing our weekly themes. So weekly themes on our Facebook support group. So our daily themes, our weekly themes, such as today's Technique Tuesday, where we're seeing lots of people upload videos of themselves completing an exercise and putting themselves out there to try to find ways that they could improve. Now, when I go through and look at all of the hashtags that are being used, the hashtag that's being used the least is on Saturday, and Saturday is self-care Saturday. So maybe that highlights that self-care might not be as fun and as exciting as, you know, Flex Friday or Throwback Thursday, but we know that self-care is so important, especially for what we're doing here, because it's all about, you know, looking after our bodies. It's all about recovering. It's all about resetting our minds so that we can continue going through this challenge.
That's right. And because it's so introspective, self-care, and it's so relevant to each individual as to what they do with self-care, it's kind of that sort of hashtag that it's really hard to. It's hard to be competitive. It's hard to be exciting. So really just own it and show us what you do, because we love it. There's always new ideas, and it always thrills us to see the way that people are looking after themselves, and also what people do outside of the challenge as well. Because as I always say, it's supposed to enhance the rest of your life. So what are you doing with the rest of your life? Show us on Saturdays.
Saturdays. I love it. Now, for our daily themes on our Facebook support group, we have one each day. And on Monday night during our live question and answer, either Nick or myself will be drawing a winner out of the hat or a protein tub, and we'll be sending that winner out a prize. So the prize for last week was a $50 gift voucher to one of our clothing partners, which is One More Rep. And I think this week we're going to be giving away a small subs pack, or we might be able to pull something else together. So make sure that you're part of the weekly prize draw by making a post on one of the daily themes. Make sure you use that hashtag so you can enter the competition, and we'll be able to draw that name out of the hat, which will be really cool.
Yeah, that's really good. And One More Rep is awesome. We're loving their clothes. So you can really have a crack with that voucher at trying a new brand.
All right, Nick, let's go into some non-scale victories. And I believe you've got a few non-scale victories for the week.
I do. I found a couple. I've been looking at them, and I love looking at what everyone's doing. So one of them is just it's a little funny one, which is Lisa Willis. She actually didn't want to go on a walk. She was just not feeling it, and probably because of lockdown. Who knows? She's in Melbourne, isn't she? So who knows? A bit of lack of motivation, and stepped out the door, went for a walk, and found $50. Now, that's not guaranteed to happen to everyone. And I mean, it's just it is a non-scale victory, because she basically, she chose to go. She was in the right place at the right time and got paid to go for a walk. So I thought that was pretty cool. It'd be nice to find $50 every time you walk. But that's a good one too, because it's a big yellow 50.
A big pineapple. I do feel kind of sorry for whoever lost their $50.
I know. I was thinking that just as I was saying that, I was actually thinking, oh, now I feel bad for the person that lost. I'm sure that good things will come again and around. And it's cute. But you know why we feel like that? Because we're coaches and we have empathy. That's why. So let's just think of it as a nice story. But yeah, I agree. And so that, moving on, we've got Del Patterson. Now, Del, you've been very active in the Facebook group, which is always wonderful to see, and sharing your journey. So this bit stood out for me, which is when you went on a little trip with your family to the zoo, and you had everything planned out for yourself in terms of all your snacks your food, your beverages, everything like that was all planned, and still you were able to be, you know, present and part of that family trip, which as a mum, when you're trying to do something that might be a little bit separate to what the family's doing, to be able to feel included and part of it and so positive and still like not starving, you know, like not enjoying the trip, that was such a positive thing to see. And it just shows me that you can incorporate the challenge and the philosophy of the challenge, which is just really basically to be healthy and live a better life, into your everyday life, which is so important.
I've got one. So this one actually just happened, I think it was overnight, and it goes to Caitlin Lawson. She posted a photo and she, of course, used the hashtag non-scale victory. How good. That helps us. And no, so she explained that she bought a pair of tights online a month ago and they didn't fit. Since doing the challenge, she lost a bit of weight and she now can fit into those tights. So she posted a photo of herself in the gym, which is awesome. So congratulations to Caitlin, who's trained, lost a bit of weight and is now able to fit in some clothes that she wasn't able to fit in previously.
That is really good. That is so good to see, because clothes are such a quantifiable way of checking your progress as well. And there's nothing better than being able to fit into new gym gear. It just really gives you just that extra bit of motivation. It's really cool. So I love that one too. I have one more. Can I just say it? So yeah, there's Jess Hughes and the Sandbag. So that's just a brand new one as well. So obviously Melbourne lockdown, we're not sure when it's going to end. So we're pulling out all of our weights again. I've got hay all over mine from the rabbits, so I've had to dust it off. So Jess Hughes has gone for a little bit of a run and then she's picked up a sandbag and she's basically doing some overhead walking lunges with this big sandbag, which is, I love that movement anyway. It looked really strong and she ended up just feeling really positive for the day. So she's made the most out of whatever's in her backyard. She could probably start to do some gardening with it all and make herself a garden, but I love it. Well done, because you know, after a year and a bit of this stuff, it can get a little bit tedious to try and find, you know, ways to do it at home. But no, we're still going.
Congratulations to all of our non-scale victory winners. It might be a great time to reflect on what are your non-scale victories, where sometimes we are doing the challenge, trying to lose weight, we're trying to lose body fat, we're trying to grow some muscles, but sometimes it's worth looking at other aspects of our lives that might be improving and other wins that we might be seeing in our day-to-day life.
Yeah, I think that's so important because, yeah, otherwise you can get really caught up in one singular thing and it can be a bit destructive. So, yeah, that's why we love non-scale victories.
All right, Nick, let's move into the Coach's Corner. So the Coach's Corner segment, Nick and I will be offering some of our tips for the week about how we can get better around training, fitness, health, everything in between. So I might kick us off and I want to talk a little bit about training. I want to talk a little bit about the idea that when we're approaching training, we should be treating ourselves like an athlete. If we're unsure about how we should enter the gym, just model yourself off of any sport that you're familiar with. And a good example would be something that we see on TV all the time, which would be just Aussie rules footy, right? So when you watch any sorts of football events, you see, you know, the guys or girls run out into the field, they do a little bit of a warm up where they're maybe running up and down a little bit and doing some like hip openers, they're doing a little bit of mobility work, then they do a little bit of skills work where they're practicing their handballs, their kicks, and maybe a few drills, and then they finally get into the game time where it's go time. And ideally, we want to be approaching our training sessions just like you would be approaching a football match. And what that means is that we want to be prepping ourselves, getting ready for the game or the working set where we're training our body. So a good way to start is to think about our warm-up. And that warm-up is quite important. We're often, you know, sometimes we just skip it. And that might not be the best practice long-term because we want to be giving ourselves some time to prepare for the actual moment that we're going to lift something, right?
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And also just the rituals that are associated, say, with footballers or their game, that is part of their ritual. They would never skip anything and rush into it. So that's something to also take from athletes. They have absolute rituals and ways of approaching their craft that we can all learn from.
Now, you're probably sitting there listening and going, well, okay, well, what am I meant to do as a warm-up? Here are a few like keystone things that we want to be hitting. Firstly, the idea of a warm-up is we want to warm up, right? So we want to actually increase our body temperature. For example, myself, I've been training in my garage and it's cold outside. So it's easy for me. So I need to find a way to basically get myself warmer. So I would go into the gym, I'm wearing a hoodie, I'm wearing a few clothing. My kind of warm up is actually moving the cars. So I move the cars out of the garage and then I kind of move out all my equipment and then I'm kind of moving my body around and I kind of start to warm up my body. So that's number one, we're trying to actually physically warm up. Number two, little tick box we're trying to do is try to get some blood flow moving around our body. So we're trying to do some large movements so that our blood can start to circulate and other fluids such as our lymphatic fluid, a little bit of synovial fluid in the joints, all these good things. And either you're at home and you might do some light sort of cardiovascular activity. Maybe you've got a treadmill, you're doing 5 minutes on a treadmill for a walk. In the gym, similar, maybe a brisk walk. Sometimes people are walking to the gym so that they're actually getting that blood flow circulating. Or doing some really light exercises to get that blood flow. Okay, so that's our two boxes so far. We're getting actually warm and then we're trying to promote some fluid movement.
That's right. And also I think that blood flow also, it does just help you to get into the zone because you start to release a few endorphins from moving and therefore, you know, you start to feel like you can approach your session and go, oh, this is going to be okay, you know, no matter what. It just helps your mindset to just those endorphins.
Then we kind of move into that tick box number three, where we're starting to do a little bit of like mobility-based work, where if you are, let's say, training in the morning, your joints might be a little bit stiff and you might not have the same flexibility as you would towards maybe the end of your session. So we can do some simple mobility-based work, and that could be some bodyweight squats, or maybe you have a problem point where your shoulders are really stiff, so you do some rotation work, or maybe you feel that your upper back's really stiff, so maybe you do some bends and some twists, those types of things, or you might have some tight hips, you do some hip openers. So we're doing some sort of mobility work. Now, sometimes we get caught up in this idea and we go, well, I heard somewhere that some static stretching isn't really helpful because you lose power. And we go, that was demonstrated in some studies. But then we do find that when we take ourselves away from that stretching for a couple of minutes, we get that restoration of that power reflex. So it's okay to do some static stretching before you train. We don't want to be doing like heavy ballistic style training if you were, let's say, a gymnast before we train, because we might be losing some power. So some mobility work. You're not going to do a heavy stretch and then go straight into like a one rep max of squat. Not wise. So then we go into that area number four, which is actually activation work. So that could be maybe some banded activation work for our glutes, or some core work to try to prime our midsection. We've got a nice priming routine on your training template as well. So it doesn't really matter what we're doing in terms of that priming, but it'll be wise to target the areas of our body. So if you're training, let's say, upper body, you might be wanting to do some priming work for some stabilizers in the shoulder so that you can get ready to train. Okay. So we've hit a few tick boxes here. We've got physically warming up our body. We've got increasing our blood flow. We've got some mobilization work, and then we've got some activation work. So tick, 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 tick. Once we've kind of ticked those four boxes, and it doesn't, yes, there might be some sequential order. We want to warm up our body first before we kind of do mobility work, but we kind of tick those four boxes. And sometimes we do all of them in a very close moment. Okay. Then we kind of go into some prep work for the actual movement that we're going to be doing. Okay. So that's when we kind of go through a stage process where we're working our way up to our working set. So let's say I'm going to do a squat and I'm going to squat maybe 100 kilos. What I would choose to do is I might start with just the barbell, and that would be maybe a 20 kilo barbell. And I might do 10 reps, right, of that barbell. Then I might add a plate on each side. So I'll go up to maybe 60 kilos, right? So I might do 60 kilos for maybe 5 or 10 reps. And then I work my way up to that 100. So I'm staging my way up. Now, sometimes we get caught up in these really long progressive staging where we might do 20 kilos, 30 kilos, 40 kilos, 50 kilos, 60 kilos, 70 kilos, 80 kilos, 90 kilos, then 100, right? So we're basically doing like 10 sets of warm-ups before we actually do it. And sometimes that could be a little bit limiting. You're doing too much work where we're basically doing all the things. And imagine if you get a little bit stronger where you're, I don't know, doing, let's say, a leg press at 200 kilos, what you're going to do, the sled plus 20, plus 30, plus 40, it's going to take forever.
Yeah. And yeah, that's not effective.
No. So we want to be doing a few kind of step ups before our working set, and something like maybe like two or three step ups to that working set progressively, depending on what kind of what plates we're using, is a wise way to go, right? Especially for that working, that first kind of working set of an exercise. Now, these warm up sets are quite important because that's kind of like where we're practicing how we're doing the movement. So let's say a squat, you might do your barbell movement and you're kind of like, you know, figuring out the movement for the day where you're like, oh yeah, like my hips feel a bit tight. Okay, it feels a bit strange. And then you get to 60 kilos, you go, okay, I feel a bit better. All right, I'm getting a little bit deeper. Good. And then we get into that 100 kilos.
Yeah, like you sort of start to know what, you know your weights and you know where you need to warm up and how many reps you'll be doing. That's sort of, that's more towards that advanced as well. But it's really, it's good to be able to learn as quickly as you can where your body needs to be.
Then once we've done our like kind of first exercise, and often that first exercise is kind of like that big kind of exercise, such as like a squat, a bench press, a deadlift, an overhead press, big compound like exercise. Then for the other exercises, we don't necessarily need to do a big elaborate warm up, right? So if you kind of do something like a squat and then like a lunge, you might not need a warm up for a lunge. And then maybe like a leg extension, you might not need a warm up for leg extension, then a calf raise. Okay, you don't really need to warm up. If you're doing, let's say, a full body program, you might do squats first. So you might do a nice warm up to a squat. And then next, you might do a bench press. And you go, okay, well, maybe I want to do one or two working sets before I do my bench press. And then you might do something like a deadlift. Okay, you might want to do one or two practice sets before you actually do your working set. So it can add a little bit of time to your program, but we want to be practicing before we kind of do these big movements.
That's right. And I mean, I just tend to always, I think of my warm-up as part of the process to getting where I need to get to. So it's actually, I wouldn't be able to do what I do without my warm-up. So I try to enjoy it. I try to enjoy every single rep that I do of, say, a deadlift. It doesn't matter if it feels light. That's actually good. If my warm-up's feeling, if just say like my 60 that I put on after I do the bar, just say that's feeling good, I know that therefore I've got it in me to do a reasonably good session. So I don't take the warm-up for granted. I really respect the warm-up and just I like to really see where I'm at every time. I'm sure you're the same.
Yeah, no, I would agree, where it's a way for me to assess my like RPE for the day, my rate of perceived like effort or exertion, and also a little bit of like this idea of auto-regulation, because sometimes, I don't know, I might have a poor quality sleep. I might just not be feeling in the mood. I might be a little bit a bit stressed or a bit anxious, other things happening, you know, that biopsychosocial element of fitness. So when I'm going to go lift something heavy and I'm meant to lift, I don't know, 200 kilos on the day, I'm kind of like, oh man, like that, you know, 150 feels really hard. No way I'm going to get to 200 today. So then that's okay. I auto regulate, maybe just adjust my weights accordingly so that I can continue to see some sort of progress and then maybe tackle it again next week or look at ways to improve what's causing this interference that I'm affected with.
And you know what, like I'll just add to that really quickly. Also, the opposite can happen sometimes. You know, when you feel like you think you've had the worst day and you've got no energy and then you go in there and you don't expect things to move as well as they do, and they do. And then you go, okay, this is my day where I'm going to try and hit those extra numbers. I hadn't thought that I was going to. I thought I was going to be crap and I was just going to get through it. But then, today's the day. So sometimes it tells you the other thing. So sometimes you've got to take your brain out of it and just listen to what your body's doing. And so, yeah, I think warm-ups deserve their own entire, you know, segment on our podcast. We could talk about them forever. I think we love them.
All right, Nick, did you have anything to add for Coach's Corner today?
Yes, I just wanted to talk a little bit about, I mean, it's very similar to what you've been talking about with the warm-up, but it's just a bit broader. So I want you to think like an athlete, just like along the same lines as what you've said, and understand why you are doing everything. So that doesn't even necessarily, although we have got the forum, we've got the Facebook group, it doesn't necessarily just mean reach out every 5 seconds and go, although we're there, you know, and go, why am I doing this like this? Do your own research, see how it feels for your body, try different tempos, try different things that work for you. So say, for example, I like to know why, but then I like to take it with me and go, why for my specific body on this specific day do I need to do something? So I need to know the reason behind something. So I think don't you think it's a good idea to investigate
why you might be doing certain movements on a certain day, why there's this amount of volume per body part a week. Why would you have two leg sessions a week? What muscles are the legs made up out of? Just so many different things that you can ask. And that's, I guess, why a lot of us that have been fascinated with training and have enjoyed training, we like to then study it and go into the coaching field, because we always want to know why. So I think that whole start with why. So even if you're slightly confused about everything, or if you don't feel like it's working, go back to why. And I think you'll find a lot of your answers. So just go on a big quest.
I like it. If I was to add on to it, I would recommend an element of caution, because there are lots of rabbit holes we can kind of get into.
Oh, yeah, on the internet, definitely. Yeah, absolutely. Like, stay with what we're saying and things. It's just more like, it's not even stuff really necessarily about questioning the diet or anything that we're doing. It's more just, you know, if you look at the way that our training programs are structured, if you look at just say, why would you do full body, you know, that sort of thing, just explore it, see how it makes your body feel. And I think that you'll come up with some answers yourself. Sometimes when you can sort of answer the questions yourself and just go through that process, even just through all the material that we provide, once you've decided yourself, I think that's where the changes happen, because you believe in it.
If I was to add on, yeah, look, I think we all need to be good scientists, where we are essentially trying to apply an intervention on our body, whether that be a training program, a nutrition program, a change in our habit, whatever it be. We're trying to apply an intervention, and then we're trying to assess the outcome of that intervention. Sometimes, you know, we do need to kind of use that word of like trust the process or commit to it. We need to go, hey, we need to actually commit to this intervention, right? You can't be swapping and changing all the time. But then also there's another element to it where we go, okay, well, we might not be able to understand all of the mechanisms, because you might work as an accountant. You don't care about anatomy, biomechanics, all the other things like we do. But there might be an element where you go, okay, if I do a squat, that feels very different to when I do a lunge. And we might start to get a better understanding of, okay, well, why would we want to do a squat over a lunge? Or why would we want to do a lunge over a leg extension? Or like, why do we want to do a leg extension when we could just walk around for a little bit? Isn't that the same thing? We kind of go, well, it's a little bit different. There is different levels that we can investigate why, and we do need to be careful that we don't end up in this really deep confusion level where we go, oh my God, there's so much to this. But it's the same way as, you know, you and I look at other fields of interest where, you know, someone might love building Lego, right? We kind of go, oh yeah, that's pretty easy, but it's, oh, there's so many layers to it. You can keep learning. I think my advice would be, come with an open mind. Try to be interested in the learning process, because there is lots to learn and there's lots of things that work well with the body. And we do need to kind of test each kind of mechanism to see if it works. For example, let's say our training program's designed so that we can get the most muscle growth and train ourselves hard. It's got a good balance of volume and frequency and overall like balance throughout the program. Great. What if we modified it and tried a different training program? Can we test the effects on the body? Is it good or is it bad? We don't know. We won't know until you test that, right? And then maybe you change the volume, maybe change the reps, maybe change the weight, and we can change lots of different things, and that may cause a different outcome. So you're right. We do need to understand like why we're doing each thing, and we do want to find a source of interest, like feeling like you're that toddler again, being like, oh, what's this? Oh, what's that? That's what we kind of want. We want this eagerness to learn something, but we do need to be a little bit cautious that we're not going super deep into something that we might not completely understand.
Yeah, you know, you can even pick just one thing that you want to learn that's, you know, about your body or about yourself every time you do a challenge. And it could even be, why do I need to go a little bit deeper in my squat if it's right for me? You know, or why would it be best to, you know, raise my heels if I want a little bit more depth, if I don't have great ankle mobility? Just something, you know, just little tiny thing. And sometimes it can just make you feel like you're just a little bit more empowered, that sort of thing. But it doesn't have to, I mean, like I certainly, what would I do if I was going to do Lego? I would be like, what's the best surface to construct Lego on? That might be what I'll try and like get a nice surface and see what everyone on the internet's saying about like what's the best table to buy if you're going to do Lego. And then I'd probably leave the Lego in the box for another 6 months and then I'd go, okay, what's next? You know, so that sort of a thing. Like you don't have to know everything because we don't. I mean, gosh, I don't. I'm learning new stuff every single day. So, and yeah, like your sources, you've got to watch your sources. You've got to watch everything, but just be curious.
All right, let's go through a few questions that have come up over the past week, okay? So I might start with the first question. And this question has come up in a few different ways across different challenges over the years. And this specific question was asking about the difference between a Smith machine and free weights, okay? And the question went something along the lines of, you know, is it okay to do a squat in a Smith machine or do I have to use a barbell for a squat, right? Now, if you don't know what I'm talking about, the Smith machine is a barbell that's on a track and it just basically moves up and down, okay? Now, a standard barbell, an Olympic barbell, often weighs 20 kilos. That's a standard weight. You can get smaller ones that are 15 kilos, slightly thinner on the handles. But then on a Smith machine, the barbell is often really light, you know, maybe 2 or 3 kilos, right, on the track. And it basically moves just up and down, okay? And the main difference between the two is the element of stability, okay? So on the Smith machine, because it's quite stable, right, just moves up and down, we don't need to recruit as many stabilizing muscles to keep that bar from, you know, stopping to move in that other direction, as in forwards and backwards. Okay, so what that tends to happen is when we go on a Smith machine, we're able to lift more because we don't need as much stability, right? So it's kind of like this progression where we've got free weights where we need lots of stability, then we've got this Smith machine where we've taken away a few elements of skill required, moving it up and down, and then we can even progress even further where we go into like a machine, like a leg press, where you just sit in, put your feet on the plate and push, right? So we've kind of got this like spectrum, right? Where we've got on one side, we need lots of skill to be able to do like a squat pattern. And then on the complete other side, we need very little skill to do a leg press. We just sit on the thing and push, right? So where does this all fit? Well, there isn't necessarily, it's not fair to say that one is better than the other. We wouldn't say that a squat, you know, purely minimalist is better than a leg press, right? Because they're just different. They target different things and a balanced program would utilize lots of different tools.
Yeah, the only time you need that, like an actual squat, is if you're training for, say, powerlifting, where ultimately you'll have to use that squat. But otherwise, everything comes in handy at the gym. That's why it's there.
It all has its place. Now, we can't be really pigeonholed and going, oh, well, I'm just going to do the easiest thing. I'll just do the leg press because I just sit there and push, right? Because I need no skill. We do need to be able to do some of these high skill activities like a squat, right? Because we train a whole bunch of other movement patterns, such as our balance, our coordination, being able to access the full range of motion through a squat. So we can't completely neglect those complicated movements. But then we also can't be dogmatic and label some of these other equipment, such as the Smith machine, as something that's, you know, bad, right? Where I'd put my hand up and I used to almost make fun of people that use the Smith machine.
Yeah, I think I went through a phase. I think I did too. I went through a phase of that.
I was like, the Smith machine, we used to call it the tainted machine, right? And when I was training with my buddy, we wouldn't touch the plates that were on the Smith machine. It's like, oh, those plates are tainted. Don't go near them.
You're so funny.
Like, these are the dumb things that I used to do when I was younger, right? But then now I have a respect for the Smith machine, being like, hey, it has its place. You know, if I was going through a real hypertrophy cycle and I didn't want the stability or the skill to be the limiting factor, and I really wanted to build muscle, I might do a bulk of my exercises on the Smith machine and utilize other machines in the gym and then just touch on some, you know, free weight exercises. So it does have its place in a balanced program, but I do think it's limiting to you know, lean on those bits of equipment all the time, right? Because it's just like, you know, having crutches. Either you can use crutches forever or you can eventually get rid of crutches and walk by yourself, right? So we can't, you know, rely on those bits of equipment. So we still need to be able to do some of these more complicated skill-based activities, but we can utilize machines to see progress.
Yeah, funny, just really quick funny story. Before I started to really get into serious training, when I just
was testing out my strength at the gym, didn't really know what I was doing. I was doing massive leg presses because they're quite easy to do on your own, you know, with someone just helping you out. And I didn't go near the squat rack. So I was doing a huge amount. I think it was like, for me, it was like about maybe 210 or something on the leg press for lots and lots of reps. But I couldn't squat. I don't reckon I even had good technique with just the empty bar. That's how, like, the movement doesn't necessarily translate across. You know, strength you can build, but there are so many other variables that you sort of need to try and work on as well, just for a well-rounded program. So, like, if you actually want to walk properly and do other things, you know, you do need to actually use free weights as well. So it's like it's a happy dance, isn't it?
All right, Nick, you can answer this next question. And this question it speaks a little bit to our Melburnians listening, and then also anybody who's been affected by lockdowns, such as the one in Perth and the one in South Australia and all across the country. And it's about training at home. So if you've been training at a gym for quite some time and then lockdown hits and now you're restricted to training at home, what advice would you give that person?
Well, I think it's also something that, unfortunately, I really think that we still need to keep preparing for this. So even if you've been a bit blindsided by this lockdown, in the future or even now, because gym equipment's not necessarily that hard to get your hands on like it used to be, I would get my hands on a few things. So firstly, you need your space, you need your environment. So if you're in an apartment, if you're somewhere where you don't have a lot of space, clear some floor space. Just make some sort of space. Firstly, safety. So make sure that you're safe. Make sure that you can, you know, reach above your head, reach across. So this is my inner group fitness instructor coming out for everybody. So we're working right back. Then, there are things that you can do with our program. We obviously have the home training option, so you can tick the equipment that you might have already. So let's get that out of the way. And then obviously there's instructions as to do all of those exercises. So we've got you with that. I mean, really, I believe you would have worked on that over the last lockdown. It's very good, our home training program. The thing that you can do, though, just say that you've been in the gym and you've been crushing it and you just think, well, what can I really do? What I do, this is me all over, is I love to play with the tempo. So for me, you can't go wrong. So I go straight to my go-to is pause reps. I love that. I also love a bit of a pulse with different exercises, things that I know I really need to work on, as well as, for me, I also work on range of motion, because in the gym, you know how it is, sometimes you can get a little bit complacent. And also, if you don't film yourself, or if you're somebody who really doesn't kind of make a fuss in the gym, you know, setting up tripods, or you don't have a way to see what you're doing at home, you might actually be able to take the time with no one watching you to film your technique, have a look at your squat depth, and then go, hang on a minute, I thought that I was going, you know, my calves touching my hamstrings, but, you know, my butt's sort of still a meter up in the air, you know, that kind of a thing. So I would take the time to audit your environment, audit your technique, audit your equipment, and become as self-sufficient as possible. So that's my tip. And also come and do my class tomorrow, 7:30. I do a live class, so that's always fun. That's Melbourne time. If anyone is around, not going to work or anything, I expect a lot more people to come. And, yeah, I'll show you a few different things on there. But honestly, the other thing that you can do is do some things that you might neglect in the gym. So this is the time to try and do some core work, you know, even do some sort of some exercises that you have neglected, like even just some abdominal exercises as well, you know, things that you might sort of tack onto the end of your program, take some time, do some stretching. I can go on forever. I'm the home training queen. But, yeah, do some stretching, really stretch into those places. You know, you can do a 40-minute stretching session. Just get your steps in as well. So we're allowed to do that. So make sure that you're getting your exercise in. The other thing is, like, Steve, you know, over the next couple of weeks, just say someone's not lifting super heavy because they don't have the weights. Are they really going to lose a lot of muscle?
No. quite some good research coming out through that COVID period is that we can maintain a lot of our muscle mass through very minimal base training. And that could be as low as one workout a week. So as long as we're doing something, we can maintain a lot of our muscle. We can see some drop-offs in strength, right? Because strength is linked to our nervous system. So we can see some decreases in strength quite quickly. That's okay, because then it gets lost quickly, but it comes back quickly. But some muscle mass is going to be maintained as long as we're doing something, some sort of movement.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And look, I have not over the last, because I've been doing the bodybuilding stuff as well, I haven't touched heavy deadlifts really for a long time, but I've been doing a lot of other work that really contributes to it. And I've found that as I'm getting ready for our little game, I haven't lost that much strength either. So I feel like it's going to come back quite quickly. So, and we look, honestly, we have been in lockdown on and off for a long time, and it can make you lose your momentum, your priorities change, all sorts of stuff like that. So it's great to actually live and breathe the fact that I'll be rebuilding my strength, and I don't think it's going to take that long. So therefore I can be a living, breathing case.
Well, just to add a few more onto what you were saying, if you are at home, I would recommend that you spend some time with your shoes off to free your toes, and also spend a bit of time on the floor. So right now, while we're recording this, I'm sitting on the floor. So I think more of us can spend a bit more time on the floor, being grounded, opening up our hips, changing the way that we're sitting. So maybe you're able to do a little bit of work on the floor, take your shoes off, let the toes spread. That'd be really powerful for your body. Some movements that a lot of us neglect are things like single leg exercises or unilateral exercises, meaning one side of the body. If you are normally doing squats, try to just do like a lunge or like a Bulgarian split squat. And you may find that you're putting your whole body weight onto one leg. So that's like, you know, doing your whole body weight on your back. So let's say I weigh 100 kilos, me doing a 100 kilo back squat, I now have, you know, let's say 200 kilos of force going through my legs, 100 kilos each leg. Or I can just do a single leg squat, right? And that's going to be 100 kilos into one leg. So we can utilize that type of idea where we're doing unilateral activities.
That's true. That's actually true. Yeah. I think I spent most of last year on one leg. And I think it really actually, I think that was one of the best things I could do, because my unilateral strength was crap before that. I really don't know how both legs lifted so much when one leg was so bad, you know. So it's actually really interesting to see how you move just doing those exercises. And it takes a little while to build up, but that's such a great thing to do for your body as well, because when you come back to both, well, the power.
Well, I think, you know, we're so good at hiding our weaknesses. Let's say in a squat, you know, you might be able to squat, you're like, great, happy days, but you don't know that your right leg is donuts, right? So if you were to put yourself in a unilateral position, you force that leg to work hard and you might see some improvements. The last comment I would make is about, like what you said, tempo work. We can see some improvements with skill acquisition in tempo work. So for example, a squat, even if you needed to like hold onto a wall and slowly lower yourself down, you may be able to get nice and deep and then stand back up. And then we're practicing that skill. And then when we add load again through that tempo work, such as maybe some pauses, some pulses, some quarter reps, whatever funky word we want to use, we might improve our positional awareness in those patterns. So they're always really powerful things to practice. And I guess you and I practice it all the time, probably without thinking. All right, let's talk about another question about protein, where there might be a little bit of confusion about what protein is and then what constitutes a serving of protein. Somehow protein has been given a bad rap, where people think that, oh, I'm having too much protein, too little protein, protein's bad for me, protein's dangerous, protein. And we do need to bring it all back and understand, you know, first, like, what is a protein? Where do we get it from? And then what it does for the body, okay? So protein essentially is like amino acids. So amino acids that bind together make a protein, okay? A protein is one of our macronutrients. So there's three macronutrients: carbs, fats, proteins. Okay. So they're found in foods, and they're essentially, protein is kind of like the building blocks of life. So our body utilizes proteins to make everything from muscle to skin to hair. We use it in nerve conduction. We use it in our gut health. We use it in our heart health. We use it all over the place, and different proteins or different amino acids do different roles in the body at different times of the day. Okay. So we need protein to survive. Now, within our bro science in our field, protein ends up getting labeled as the muscle building thing. And that's fair because it does play a role in muscle building. And that's only just a couple of our amino acids. There's like, you know, 30 amino acids. So we do want to put importance to our protein intakes, that we can look after our overall health and then ultimately help our bodies to build and maintain muscle mass. Okay. Now, where we face problems is, or fears, is that we're going to be having too much protein. Too much protein is bad. And it's very hard to have too much protein because our body auto-regulates it, right? Where if you were having more and more protein, you end up having some other symptoms, such as maybe some stomach pains, maybe some flatulence, some bloating, these types of symptoms in our body. And we normally get these symptoms when we're having more than, you know, 3 grams of protein per kilo of body weight. And in contrast, to understand how much protein that is, let's say for myself, 100 kilos, that's 300 grams of actual protein. That doesn't mean that's a 300 gram piece of steak, because 300 grams of steak isn't 300 grams of protein.
No, that's very important to note, because I think that's like, an initial thing that people think. And it's fair enough to think that, but yes, it's made up of other things.
So let's use chicken as an example. 100 grams of chicken is about 20 grams of protein, because within that chicken, there's other bits and pieces, such as a little bit of fat, a little bit of carb, a little bit of other bits and pieces that make up that serving of chicken, and a whole lot of water as well in the weight. So that's the first kind of conception there. So don't be afraid of protein. We need protein. And we do know that higher protein diets lead to good changes in our body composition, good changes in our overall muscle mass, and good changes in our health. Okay. Now, within our nutrition framework, we do have servings of protein, okay? And then we've got servings of energy and servings of fruits and vegetables. Now, a serving of protein is about 150 calories, okay? So that we're trying to aim to make our serving of protein about 150 calories. And we can have a few things as servings of proteins, but we need to give them a label, right? We can't have, you know, olive oil as a serving of protein, because that is primarily a fat, right? We can't have, let's say, fruits and vegetables that might have a bit of protein in them. We couldn't have them as a serving of protein, because they're primarily closer to a serving of carbohydrate. So our definition of a protein is we want a serving of protein to be about 150 calories. And then within those calories, it makes up close to about 20 grams of protein per serve. Okay. So that we get to put a whole load of animal products in there. So we've got our beef, our chicken, our pork, our salmon, these types of things, good sources of protein, low in carbohydrate, low in fat, mainly protein, okay? There are quite a few plant-based proteins that can fill that spot, mainly things like tempeh and soy and tofu. These are nice plant-based proteins that fit the spot. Other serves of protein, which is kind of like this borderline level, but we could get away with it if we kind of squint our eyes. And that's things like our legumes, our lentils, our chickpeas, these types of things. And sometimes some nuts can fit into that category there. And even some other dairy products, like some cheeses, can fit into that space. But that's kind of like this gray area where we go, probably not.
Where do you want to put them? Yeah. And also, like, what's the caloric value for the protein, you know? Yeah.
So, you know, if we did get that 150 calories, you know, we might be sitting at about that, you know, 10 to 15 grams of protein, where we go, oh, okay. Like, if you squint your eyes, we might be able to fit in. It might not fit perfectly, but we're on that edge. Now there are some other sources of protein, which some of us kind of get misconstrued, thinking that they're good sources of protein. That's mainly things like our deli meats. So things like our salami and ham and, you know, even other like canned meats like Spam and stuff like that. Okay, they're not necessarily a good source of protein. They're probably higher in fats than anything else. So they might not constitute what we're defining as a serve of protein. You know, they might be suitable as, you know, like a little bit of an extra just so we can help. But generally things like, let's say salami as an example, relatively high in fat, not commonly used in a dieting process because they can be quite calorically dense, and it won't be helpful for what goal we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, just for bang for your nutritional buck, you know, it's probably better to forego those things. They're probably not really worth it just for your spend.
No. So protein sources, there you go. Nick, would you like to wrap us up today by talking a little bit about fat burners? Because I guess a lot of us get into that marketing mindset and we go, well, I want to burn fat. This thing's called a fat burner. I'm going to take a fat burner. That's going to burn my fat, right?
Absolutely. It's the same as for example, like, I mean, you might not be as into hair as me, but Laura probably is. You know, there are products that you use on your hair for shine or for condition, but you actually need to have decent condition going on in your hair before you attempt to buy that product as well, because otherwise it's only really going to last for, say, like maybe the second that you put it on. So that might not be the best for everybody, best analogy for people that maybe don't have hair, but you can get sucked into buying a lot of hair products that really, it only helps if you're actually got nice hair from, you know, from the inside, if your body's working well from the inside. So say with the fat burner, it is kind of one of the smallest little bits of the equation, the tip of the iceberg, if you've got everything else in place. And what is it going to do? It is actually just going to raise your metabolism. It's in terms of while you're having it, it's going to allow you to really work out harder. And when you work out harder, what happens? Well, then your body's going to have to adapt, and it may lose body fat. It may build muscle. It may raise your metabolism because you've built muscle. So it's like a chicken and egg thing, you know. But I would have them in terms of just to make my gym session that little bit harder. So if I was very tired and I needed a little bit of a pep up, I would have something like that just to get my central nervous system fired up, to get me going. But I'd make sure not to have it too late at night as well. But it isn't going to just put it this way, if it just burnt your fat from you just sitting there, then we wouldn't even have to have this conversation. You know, it'd just be something that people had every morning. It is just an add-on. It's an extra. I wouldn't rely on it. And I certainly wouldn't be, you know, eating 10 slices of cake the night before and go, oh, I'm just going to have my fat burner. That's the same as, you know, I'll never, ever brush my hair, but I'm going to get this expensive oil to put on it. You know, there's a problem in the chain. So it lives at the top. And it's good. And you know what? They're tasty. They're a bit of fun. They're great to have. They've got some other ingredients in them that can make you feel good. They've got some vitamins and minerals, which can't hurt. But I wouldn't rely.
I like a good answer. So fat burners, just adding on a few things, or also called thermogenic agents, essentially aim to increase our energy expenditure through a few different pathways. One being physically trying to increase our core temperature. So that's our thermic effect of food, right? That's one pathway. Another one is trying to boost you up with some caffeine or some green tea extract to make you a bit more jittery, right? So that you're expending a little bit more energy by just moving around a bit more and talking a little bit faster, right? So that's one way that it can
do
that.
You.
That's me. It's me all the time.
You don't need them.
No, I don't need any fat burners. And then another pathway is through that increase in focus, like you said, where when you are going into a training session, that might mean that you train a little bit harder. That might mean you train a little bit longer so that you expend more energy. So essentially, we're trying to increase our overall energy expenditure. And then when we increase our energy expenditure by utilizing a tool like a fat burner that can change or tip the balance in that, you know, calories in, calories out model that we're using, which could lead to potentially maybe some extra fat loss. Okay, so keywords there, maybe potentially might help a little bit, but it can be that little bit of icing on the cake, which might be helpful for some. But like you said, Nick, if you don't have that foundation there, you're just wasting your time by prioritizing these types of products when you should be spending more time brushing your hair.
Yeah, exactly. And like once you've got the hair sorted and brushed and all smooth, then do the extra products, because believe me, that will make you so glamorous. And that's the same with the fat burner. Like it is there to be used when you've sort of got to that point where you've earned it in terms of understanding where it fits in. So you can't just never ever use it to try and negate the effects of something else that you've done. I think that's the thing. It doesn't cancel anything out. It'll only enhance. So doesn't cancel any negative stuff, any things that you've done with excess calories. It doesn't do that. It just enhances. So it has to be good. You know how if something's bad, it's only going to enhance the bad. If you're doing well, it's going to enhance that. So it's just going to build on what you're already doing. I'm making triangles. That's my way of explaining.
All right, look, Nick, let's wrap it up there. Great episode of the podcast this week. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know that you enjoyed us. Let us know on maybe the Facebook group or the forum. Found this episode helpful? Share it with a friend.
On Instagram, we've been tagged a few times. So people tag us on Insta and they tell us that they're listening. I love it. I will reshare it on my stories. You know, we love to see that because that means that other people might also join in and have a bit of a listen as well.
All right, Nick, let's wrap it up and I'll catch you next week.
Thanks, Steve. See ya.